The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. Hey everyone, I'm Sarah Edmondson.
Hi, I'm Anthony Ames, Sarah's husband, aka Nippy.
And we're here to talk about things that are just a little bit culty. We were in a cult and we woke up, and it was all captured in a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, also in my memoir, Scarred.
And then we made this podcast. I guess you could say we're technically a cult show now.
But not your typical cult show. We're not so much about the grisly details. We are about kicking the doors down on the shame and the secrets that make these culty things so destructive.
We're here to have frank conversations about how cool things can cross over into the cultiverse. How to spot trouble when you see it, and what happens when it comes to recovering from something culty, if that happens to you.
Each week, we'll call on experts, advocates, fellow survivors, and whistleblowers to help us unpack what's going on in the cultiverse.
We're here to share what we know on everything from red flags to resiliency, and to have a few laughs along the way, because sometimes you gotta laugh.
Thank God. Now, we have a lot to cover, so let's get this show rolling, shall we? A Little Bit Culty Season 2 drops new episodes every Monday on the Acast app or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And to learn more, visit us on Instagram or at alittlebitculty.com.
Well, we have a live one today, don't we, Sarah? Lula Rich.
Lula Rich, the Tiger King of 2021. Everybody's watching.
It does have a Tiger King vibe.
In a world where many women wear disgusting leggings. I kind of felt like Ace Ventura when I said that. Did you get that vibe?
If you've seen the show, this episode is going to resonate with you. If you haven't, I'd probably pause.
And go watch it.
Come back to this one. Yeah, it's only four episodes. It's pretty light. Certainly entertaining, and it has some great guests on it too. So
this was probably our fastest connect with someone, have a quick exchange on Instagram, hear their story, watch the documentary, and book them. It was all less than a week. Normally this takes months and months to get a guest, but Roberta is a live one because she's so passionate about what she's talking about. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, let's give a little backstory. So make friends, be part of a community, sound familiar? And at the same time, have autonomy and make an income, all while raising your kids as a stay-at-home mom. Sounds good, right? I want that. Throw in some buttery soft leggings in your main product offering, and you've got the stuff of MLM gold. Or as it allegedly turns out, MLM mold. That's the logline for LuLaRoe, the leggings company that recruited tens of thousands of women, many of them moms, with the promise of a hashtag boss babe lot, with the promise of a boss babe lifestyle that is featured in the buzzworthy Amazon docuseries, Lulu Rich. It's definitely a wild story. Founded by married couple Deanne and Mark Stidham in 2012, the family-run leggings company ascended to billion-dollar growth, and then almost as fast as it skyrocketed, it started melting down. According to a recent CNN report, the company was dogged by reports of declining quality, smelly leggings, and bizarre prints that were phallic or yonic in nature. FYI, yonic means a vajayjay.
Sorry, for our listeners, what's a vajayjay?
A vagina.
Ah.
There was prints that had like hamburgers and kiss lips.
That's a spoiler alert right there.
Right in the crotch line. Bizarre. I mean, personally, I thought most of the leggings were hideous, except for one pair that had like feathers on it. I could probably wear those to yoga, but generally I was like, why do people go so nuts? I don't like them. I don't like these leggings. I guess it's, you know.
I wasn't taken by them either.
To each their own, right, sweetheart?
Mm-hmm.
New recruits had to pay from $5,000 to $10,000 to enroll, and it sounds like it did not go well. There have been bankruptcies galore. Meanwhile, the recruiters that brought those newbies in made thousands per month. Last month, the state of Washington successfully prosecuted LuLaRoe. More on that to come. And that all sounds a little bit culty. So today, we're excited to welcome former LuLaRoe trainer Roberta Blevins to our podcast to talk about her experience and what led her to exit from the company and her life now. She's an anti-MLM advocate and the host of her own podcast, Life After MLM, where she shares the stories of other survivors, advocates, and experts. And in her words, she works to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. I love that. Without further ado, our new hero, Roberta Blevins.
Hey, Roberta.
Hey.
So happy to have you on our pod.
I'm so excited. You have no idea.
Well, I don't know who's most excited. I don't know how to measure that. But when you reached out, just so you know, we did our episode on MLMs in season one. And so many people wrote to us going, oh, this is just like that LuLaRoe leggings MLM. And I said, there's a leggings MLM? I mean, anything can be an MLM now, but a leggings MLM? I hadn't heard of it. And then now with the doc on Amazon Prime, everybody's talking about it. All our fans are emailing us saying, you got to do one on Lula Rich and LuLaRoe. And just then you were reaching out. So I thought, let's just jump on this bandwagon and talk about this and expose these douchebags. I mean, what the hell?
I was so serendipitous.
My first question is, do they make leggings for men?
You know what? Not specifically, but there are some LuLaBros that love to wear their tight pants. And there are some YouTube videos of them dancing all to that right. Jimmy Fallon song in LuLaRoe leggings. And it is so Lula cringe is what I've been calling it.
Oh, there's Lulu language, LuLaBro, cringe. I want to know all the language. And just so you know,
you have to have that culty language. Of course you
do. This episode is going to come after an episode that's all about cult language and how language is used to recruit, to retain, to gaslight, to manipulate, all that stuff. So this is for our audience. This is going to be so rich
in amazing
nuggets of goodness. So yeah, we have a lot of questions for you. And just so you know, our general format for people who get out of anything, MLM, cults, I mean, really in our mind, it's the same thing at this point, is, you know, how did you get in? What did you think you were getting into? How did you get out? What woke you up? And how are you healing? So that's the overall structure.
Yeah.
And in that, we're wanting to know, and for our audience, show, you know, what happened to you so that they can hear about it and go, oh, that's not right. And that's abusive. And that's, I mean, people write to us and say, Lulu Rich and what was exposed is definitely a little bit culty, but why? Like, what specifically about it? What was the processes that were used that make it not healthy? And so that people can see that. And that's our goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. In short, it's turning your story into content and wisdom. So
absolutely.
Does that make sense? And I don't know where you are in the process. That's one of the things Sarah and I were, when we were discussing, we were like, well, let's figure out where she is in the process of understanding what she's looking at.
Yeah. No, I'm so in it. I'm there, you know,
and that's the education.
Oh yeah.
Right.
On my podcast, I have an MLM survivors podcast. And very similar to this, where how did you get in? What happened? What opened your eyes? And what are you doing now? Kind of thing. It's the same format, but it's just MLM. And we talk about all different kinds of MLMs and all different kinds of things. And we break it down. You know, people will tell me things. I'm like, that's a cult tactic. And here it is in the BITE model. And this is what it is. And this is what it's used for. And this is why they're doing it. And sometimes we have these episodes where the guests are like, oh my God. And I'm like, I know, right? It's crazy. And they're just like, I never thought about it like that. I said, I know, right? And I like to say, like, once you see it, you can't unsee it anymore. It's like the emperor with his clothes, right? You finally look up and you're like, wait a second, he's naked.
You know, what's ironic about that is that Keith used to tell that story all the time. And there was even a company that he created with the acronym of the emperor who had new clothes. Did you know about that, Nippy?
Knew a little bit about it. I think it was a hypothesis, right? It wasn't really.
Yeah, he just loved to do what he was talking about, as all sociopaths apparently love to do. I've learned since.
Of course.
But before we get into all that, and we're hoping that our listeners will have watched Lulu Rich by the time they hear this. But for those who don't know your story, and I'm sure you're sick of talking about it, as am I, but can you give us like the cliff notes of basically when you signed up for this? And tell us a little bit about yourself and what you thought you were signing up for. What did you think you were getting into?
Yeah, so I was introduced to LuLaRoe by a mom friend in a Facebook group that I was in. She wasn't even selling them. She just was wearing them. And she shared a picture that was cute. And I said, oh, those are kind of cute. I've never seen those leggings before. And being a stay-at-home mom at the time with a young daughter, I was looking for comfortable things that were cute, you know? So she's like, oh, it's this company. So I did my research. I looked into it. I couldn't find anything. I don't know if they were suppressing the information at that point or nothing was bad enough that people were like actually reporting it at that point. But I remember Googling like, is LuLaRoe a scam? Is LuLaRoe a pyramid scheme? And I couldn't find anything. And I was like, okay. And the way that they had it, it seemed a little different than the way that other MLMs were structured. And it seemed just different enough that maybe it wasn't, you know, as bad as all the other ones. So against my worst judgment.
So you were aware at the time about MLMs and that some of them were scammy or whatever.
Okay. Absolutely. But I didn't realize that it was the business structure itself. I thought that it was just, oh, I just shouldn't be selling weight loss pills. I should be selling colorful buttery crotch pants instead. Like that's just more my vibe. Mm-hmm. It's the same. It's the same. It doesn't matter what carrot they're dangling or what bauble is, you know, being displayed. They're all the same. But at the time, I didn't know that. At the time, I thought I was going to be selling leggings in my living room. I joined a couple Facebook groups just to see how everything was going. They were selling so fast. I'd go in there, I'd be 10 minutes late and half of it would be sold out already. And I'm like, what is happening? Yeah. This is like Beanie Babies again. Like you just couldn't get them. And I remember like, I just wanted black leggings. I think it took me 3 weeks to find somebody that had a pair of black leggings to buy.
Were they really that amazing? Were they really that comfortable?
I mean, nothing more comfortable than you can find like the soft, fuzzy ones you get at Walmart for like $388.
Wow.
I mean, they're not any different. They're very, very similar.
They created a buzz about it. It's kind of like, you know, you see it in like Pokemon cards or baseball cards or stuff like that. They created the scarcity. And
yeah.
There's a dopamine. Yeah, there's a dopamine hit that. You get from that.
A dopamine addiction. Like, ooh.
So women were buying multiple leggings. Oh my God.
It was insane. I was just watching fly off the shelves and I'm just like, I got to get on this. Like, this just seems so easy. Mm-hmm. This is such a great thing for me to be doing when my daughter's asleep or having a nap or whatever. I can just sell leggings. Like, how hard is it to take pictures, post them on Facebook? I wasn't even thinking about the dresses and the skirts and I just thought leggings, so easy. Mm-hmm. But when I finally joined LuLaRoe and onboarded, they didn't even have leggings. They were sold out. That should have been another red flag. It really should have. I should have been like, what?
When did you first get in, like onboard as it's called?
Right.
For our listeners, it's akin to signing up or being enrolled or whatever.
Accepted into the family of LuLaRoe. Right.
You were onboarded and then there's a moment in the doc, you're like, I'm in a fucking cult. Where, how long was it between your onboard and your, oh my God, I'm in a fucking cult moment?
So the grooming started in October of 2015. I signed the papers in February of 2016. I had to wait 6 weeks to join because there were so many people wanting to join FOMO. So many people that need to get on this. You have to wait 6 weeks. But while you're doing this, join this other group called the Q, like it was called the Q. So you'd be in the Q and you join these Q groups. You were called QBs. And all these little QBs, again, with the cult language, all these little QBs will be talking to each other. What did you get? Oh, I got this printer. Oh, what printer is that? Well, we like literally sold Amazon out of thermal printers. Like you could not find a thermal printer.
What's a thermal printer?
It's a printer that uses heat on like a label. So instead of using ink, it would just use heat. So you just have to buy these heat labels like you would get in a receipt. Oh,
I've seen those.
Like in a fast food restaurant or
but
something.
What would you use them
for? For our packages. For when you're shipping packages out, right? So you need this thermal printer. Oh, okay. So we're buying all these. You need these racks. These are the best racks. We're selling out Amazon on racks, on hangers, on thermal printers to get all of this stuff to open up our own boutiques, right?
This is before you're even onboarded. Let me ask you something though.
Before
you
said onboarded.
The grooming started. I know what that means. And we're trying to be really careful with our language, just so you know, after our language episode with Amanda Montell, who wrote Cultish, which I highly recommend. And she does a whole thing on MLMs and the structures that are in place that keep them so toxic, so little side note, little plug for her book.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really, really, really good. So we're trying to be careful with the words like grooming and brainwashing and cult, even like they're just very hyperbolic words and they use a lot of nuance. So we're trying, when you say grooming, what do you mean by that? What specifically were they doing to prepare you for what was about to come? And I'm just going to put this in, normalize the abuses that were about to take place.
Okay, that's actually perfect. Normalizing the abuse, right? We already start in a deficit, right? We're starting in a deficit. We're out of leggings. Sorry. We're out of things. You're going to have to wait 6 weeks. Just be patient with us. We love you. We're a baby company. We're working out the kinks. You're part of this. You're part of us. We love you so much. You're going to have to wait 6 weeks though. So here's a group to join with a bunch of other people. So you normalize the fact that there's scarcity. It's so busy. It's so much. Mm-hmm. Like they're going to run out. They're so popular. Everybody loves them so much. They just can't keep up with the demand. It's so incredible. So you're like, oh yeah, 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 of course. So that was some sort of like preparing us for scarcity, always with the assume innocence. That was something that was said constantly, assume innocence, because we would say, clearly you're doing this intentionally. Assume innocence. It is not like that at all.
So you weren't allowed to call out something negative.
Never.
You had to assume that they had good intentions. They would never have bad intentions.
Never.
Well, also assume innocence would fall into the category of a thought-stopping
yes,
cliche.
Absolutely.
So we're going to plug Amanda Montell's book because she did such a good job on language. A thought-stopping cliche is what you see in a lot of these groups where you'll have a question about something and it'll be something like, well,
in your case, probably it is what it is, what it is.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. It is what it is.
Or assume innocence.
Assume innocence. And so that interrupts your questioning nature, your skepticism, and stifles it. Assume innocence. Okay, maybe it's me. Maybe it's, you know, whatever.
I saw it a lot
in
the doc,
in a lot of places.
There's so many things, similarities I saw, but we'll get to that in a second. So you get onboarded. You've been set up to feel, sounds like you've been love bombed. You feel excited to be part of a community. You're feeling really enthusiastic about what your income potential and changing your current situation. So they're dangling possibilities of endless dreams and everything coming to fruition in this company. And it's the only way to get there.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Based on the fact that Deanne sold $20,000 worth of skirts out of the trunk of her car, which is a lot of skirts to hand make, but that's the math on
yeah.
that. Yeah.
They were definitely not handmade. I don't know how many were. They did make a few. They used to sit around the table, and actually Deanne's sister, Diane, was involved and then edged out and Mark was brought in. And then, so there's some weird stuff there too.
At this point, are you encouraged to onboard as well? Or you can't onboard until you've been on?
Yes, I can. I can 100% take people underneath me if I'd like. In fact, I had one, my really good friend. She was asking me, what is all this stuff you're talking about? I said, I think I'm going to join. It looks really good. And she started doing research and she came to me and she's like, I think I want to join too. I said, I literally joined 2 days ago. She's like, can I join underneath you? I said, yeah, here's my link. I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. Wow. And one of my very good friends joined right underneath me, also not knowing anything. And we rode the Q wave together. And so because I had someone underneath me, as soon as she onboarded, like 4 or 5 days after I did, I got a bonus. Almost instantly, because I had that person underneath me. And I'm not the only person that was encouraged to recruit while in the queue. And I don't know if that's intentional, like, look, you onboarded and you immediately got a bonus. See, it works. It's amazing. Or what? Because it seems silly if it's meant to be a real business and it's meant to be the wholesaler like they claim. Why the emphasis of getting so many people on that don't know what they're doing without being put underneath the right people? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it's not silly just to make you feel better, because I also did something very similar when I brought somebody in with me. And when I graduated from my 5-day, I had an extra stripe on my sash. And that was super motivating. A stripe on my sash is motivating. So I can understand why a bonus check would be motivating.
Yeah. And like the feeling you get with the stripe, like I felt that when I got my watch, and it felt like wearing it and being like, everybody will know how serious I am now, because they'll see me wearing this and they'll just know that I'm more serious than someone that doesn't have it. And that's not what that means at all. But that's what they make you believe it means.
I get it. I was so internally satisfied by watching the doc, because it was like, oh, this is another way for people to understand what motivates people who want to go up the ranks. And there were, again, so many similarities. But specifically when I saw that watch, I mean, I would have much preferred to have a watch as a bonus than when I was striving to get my orange sash and then my green sash. But my green sash meant so much to me, because people knew that I was like a real leader. I ran multiple businesses and all the things that the sash represented. So I understand what that watch meant to you.
You guys got some bling.
I think actually Nexia might have survived if they'd given us watches instead of sashes. Don't you think?
No, I'd have sold mine.
Also, quick ironic tidbit. The last time I saw Nancy Salzman, she gave me a gold strap. for my Apple Watch. She gave me like a very fancy blingy gold watch, which I'm actually wearing in the picture that's on the cover of the New York Times when we expose them. I put that on purpose as a little, kind of a little fuck you, little.
I love it.
I still got the watch. Still got my, so I have my watch story. I got my watch from Nancy. Anyway, digress. So you get onboarded, you're with your friend, and there was a period of the good years, right? Where you're making good money. You think that you're helping other women. Tell me about that little chunk.
You know, in the very beginning, that's really what it felt like. You know, like so many people were coming in and so many people were interested in it. It was such an easy way. It was an easy way to make money. But of course, that's how all MLMs are in the beginning. You know, that's just how they are. So my experience was not unique in any way other than that I was closer to the top because I got in earlier. But from a non-pyramid standpoint, it really felt like I was helping women with social media, getting their name out there, like learning how to market themselves, learning how to, you know, do business things. I hate to call MLMs businesses because they're not.
But you need business skills to do.
But business skills, yeah. You know, and it was interesting to watch people grow and like their successes were my successes and not in a monetary way, although it was, but I felt proud of these women. Like, oh my God, like, look what you did. That's incredible. Like you had a huge sale or you did this thing or look how you put yourself out there. You were so shy before. So that was another thing. Like I felt like we were a family and we were changing and we were growing and we were being better together. And it felt so incredible. It felt so incredible. It was the longing that I had had for that community when you're younger in your 20s, before you're married and you have kids. It's that gap between that and when your children are of an age where people actually want to hang out with you. And so not having that community because I was, you know, at home with my daughter and then finding it online. And it was so motivating, so much love bombing. So you're a rock star. You're amazing. Oh, you know how to do social media? We've never had anybody like that on our team. You'd be such an asset. You could help us so much. Things like that, that triggered feelings that I had inside me that I already felt like I'm worth this. I'm good. I'm smart. These are the things that I was feeling. And I didn't feel like I was getting it from the outside source because I was so isolated with my daughter and she, you know, thought I was awesome, but it's different.
It's different when you have a group of people that are making you feel special, right?
Yeah. And meeting these women and they're like, oh my God, you're amazing. And then doing the things they tell me to do and having it work. And then being like, oh my God, they're right. This is real. And then seeing it with my own eyes and being able to perpetuate that with other people. But it's not real.
Before you go to that, then them using your success to show other people that it's possible, right?
Absolutely.
And say, look, she can do it. You can do it. The whole rags to riches.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't at the top of the pyramid and I wasn't at the bottom of the pyramid. I was right in the middle. I call it like floating in like the, oh God, what do I use?
What rank was it?
I was a trainer, but okay. I was two people away and those people were in the queue waiting. So as soon as those people were to onboard, I would have been ranked up to a coach.
Okay.
But the mass exodus happened and everything started to crumble. And that's when I started looking around and I was like, this is not sustainable. What is going on? Why are they making these horrible decisions? What is happening?
Right.
It didn't seem like a business. It seemed like a scam. And I didn't understand, like, if we want to do this, we should be doing that. But we're not doing that. We're doing this completely opposite, ridiculous thing that doesn't make any sense from any business standpoint at all. Why? And they're like, do you want to go on the cruise? And I was like, well, I didn't earn the cruise. No, I know, but you've been working so hard and your team is growing and you were just like, you just do so much for our team. And I just have an extra cruise. And I find out later they had many extra cruises, but I had an extra cruise and I wanted to gift it to you because I know how hard you've been working.
So you didn't earn the cruise, but they wanted to give it to you anyway at the time that everything was falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar.
Little tidbit. As we left and we like blew the whistle and we were like exposing things, they started promoting people who hadn't earned it.
People who are our friends.
Who are still in.
They would target people who are going through a crisis. You're going through an internal crisis of, should I stay? Should I leave? And here's a present to keep you. You got bribed. Yeah,
100%.
Did you go on the cruise?
I absolutely did. I should have listened to Lachey. It was a nightmare.
Really?
She's right.
Lachey is in the dock, right?
Yeah, she's the girl that says that she doesn't want to go on the cruise.
She's the one who said, I don't want to go on a cruise with a bunch of white people.
I was like, that's awesome. She was one of my favorite. You and her were my favorite people.
She's amazing. She's amazing.
Oh, I love that she said that.
She's amazing.
Because I knew that's what she was thinking.
I should have listened.
So why was the cruise a nightmare?
Well, okay. So that year there were two cruises because mm-hmm. there were so many people, even though I was given the cruise and I didn't qualify. It just doesn't make any sense, right? All of it doesn't make sense. It's just, they're all baubles and trinkets. Mm-hmm. So they had two boats. The first boat was 100% LuLaRoe. That was the absolute cult cruise. I believe that is the cruise where Deanne told everybody to get on their knees as a professional advice.
Oh, right. To please make sure their husbands were pleased. Right. Yeah,
that's okay. The cruise that was said. It's been said multiple times, but that was, I think, the one that most people heard it at. And then there was a second cruise that happened like 2 months later. And that's the one that I got invited to. And I literally got invited like 3 or 4 weeks before it happened. So it was a lot of scrambling to get everything fixed. But again, I think that's intentional. Like,
yeah,
we'll give it to you, but you have. And I remember she was like, I have this cruise, but I have to hear back by 5 o'clock today, or I have to give it to somebody else. And I remember calling in my husband at the time. And I'm like, do you want to go on this cruise? He's like, wait, what? I was like, I mean, we have to. I'm just going to tell her yes. Okay. We'll just figure it out. And he's like, okay. You know,
did you have to pay to go on the cruise?
The room was free. The cruise, like the cabin,
yeah,
was free. Everything else I had to pay for. Okay. So, I mean, you know, it's all inclusive if you buy a cruise, but just like the basic package. But I live in San Diego and the cruise went out of Florida. So I had to fly to Florida. And the cruise port is like an hour and a half outside of the airport. So then I had to get an Uber, but the cruise left in the morning. So I had to fly out the night before. And then get an Uber to the hotel and then stay at a hotel and then get in the morning and take another Uber. I mean, we were probably already at $1,000 just to get to Florida with all of that.
That chaps my ass.
All right, so that's the second cruise.
The first cruise was the big culty cruise. It was completely decked out in LuLaRoe. Everything was LuLaRoe colors. There were no drink packages available. If you wanted alcohol, you had to buy them individually, probably to discourage it because they're so ridiculous. But LuLaRoe, again, is a Mormon company, so they're dry and they did not allow drink packages.
Nippy, you missed that in the doc. Deanne taught women to keep your husband happy to get on their knees. Did you miss that reference?
Yeah.
Oh, so she's basically breeding Lulu Hoes.
No.
Basically, it was if you do your wifely duty and all you have to do is get on your knees for 5 days.
Oh my God.
You will please your husband and he won't care what you spend.
Oh my God. Right? Way to empower women.
That was actually another similarity. Before I tell you what I saw there with the similarity with the toxic female empowerment bullshit, what did you see when you heard about our story in terms of the parallels?
Oh my gosh. Well, so when I heard about everything, it all happened, I think, in what, 2017 is when it all came out?
Yeah.
Okay. So I had just left LuLaRoe and I was hot on the anti-MLM. Like I was like, these are all the same. And I was listening to podcasts and news, anything I could find. And I remember when all of that came out because I was like, holy, holy shit. Like, see, they're cults. This one is far more extreme and went way farther than any of the ones I've seen, but it's still an MLM that's a cult and is manipulating women and getting them to do things they would never do under normal circumstances. And I just remember hearing it and like, not believing it, not that I didn't think it happened, but just being like suspended disbelief, like how? Mm-hmm. I commend you.
Thank you.
Because I know what I go through reliving this every time I tell it. And mine isn't even a fraction of what you went through. So I can't even imagine what you have to go through.
The process is the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
But what she just said about me, I feel about that but compared to even the other women who had worse things done to them in our group and other women from other groups where I'm like, oh my God, like even though getting branded and all that sucked, but like compared to what, you know, people who were born and raised in something like Children of God, you know, like in groups that were way more horrific. But here's what somebody told me is like, you can't compare your trauma to someone else's trauma. Oh. Your trauma is your trauma. My trauma is my trauma.
Right.
It's not more or less. There's no scale. There's no prizes. It's just like we went through it. And talking about it like this, at least for me, and I hope for you too, and it sounds like it is the most healing, cathartic, and overall, like, in line with what is clearly your values, because, and this is a thought I had when you were speaking about the community and all the things that you were drawn into and what they used. And this is something we learned from Yanya Lalich, right? From Take Back Your Life, babe. Another great book that we talk about all the time is that, do you want to explain how they use your values?
That one's called Moral Injury.
Yeah.
Right. They use your principles. So they enroll you to take it off the cult. So you can find it in other domains. You know, I remember first reading about it where, I think this is one everyone can relate to, a soldier enlists into the idea of going to fight for freedom or fight for democracy. He finds himself over in a foreign country, pulling women and children out of a hut, and it just doesn't add up. And it takes a certain amount of cognitive dissonance to recognize that you have to maintain your cognitive dissonance to keep doing what you're doing. And ultimately, if you come to terms with the fact that you got used to go accelerate someone else's agenda based on your principles, that's the cult moral injury. Your morality got abused. And it goes on, it's rampant. You know, how do you get people to run into gunfire, you know, and look at your history books? Is, you know, that's been going on for years. Sometimes, you know, people do it for noble reason, and sometimes they're abused. That, to me, was where I felt like my morality was abused. It's called the moral injury. But if you read Amanda Montell's book, there's a specific passage, and I think it's Amanda Montell's book, I'm not sure, but there's a part where she talks about the Jim Jonestown cult. And one of the things that was noted in that is Jim Jones had a lot of Black women around him. And at the time, in the 70s, whatever, it was the Black women, and still goes on in today, but particularly they felt really disenfranchised and disillusioned with what was going on in the United States. And so he appealed to empowering them. And what I saw in this documentary is a lot of women were targeted that were stay-at-home moms.
Yeah.
And that's where it seemed like this organization, their demographic was tapping into where they were susceptible. You can stay at home. You can be powerful too. You can, you know, you can do all those things. And whatever skill set, asset you have was abused.
It's like the cognitive dissonance is disguised as loyalty. And I'm like, you guys, for real? And they're like, but Deanne's been really good to me. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, so it's almost like the loyalty reinforces the cognitive dissonance. That was actually my question for the end, is why are people still in with all this information?
So your loyalty is being abused.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're saying, do you want to be a loyal person? That sort of thing. So it's obligating you through that.
It's like, you know, Deanne's done so much for you. Like, why would you say anything bad about her? Like, she's done so much for you. So there's a lot of guilt. This is what I'm seeing. Like, people are speaking out about their experience, but they're not being truthful 100%. They'll be like, oh, with the Lula Rich documentary, I've gotten so many messages. I just want to say that while there were, you know, horrible things that happened, I still had a wonderful time.
Are they trying to not be sued? Or are they trying
confirming that most of what is said in the documentary is true? Spoiler alert, all of it is true. But my experience doesn't mirror her experience. So, and I'm just like, so you're invalidating my experience by saying I'm invalidating yours. Cool. Thank you.
Instead of being curious about your experience,
they
have to minimize it and say it's not theirs. So here's what Sarah and I talk about all the time. You have to be sensitive to your own inner honesty or whatever's going on with, like, are you telling the story to preserve your own image? Right. And the best stories and the ones that are the most teaching and the people can get the most out of is when you tell a story that incriminates you and takes responsibility for your participation in it.
Absolutely.
Because then people are like, this guy's bulletproof. This woman's bulletproof because she basically took responsibility for what she did. She owned it and now she's going forward. And that's the story. So people, you can always tell when they're telling a story and half taking responsibility because they're embarrassed that they may have been susceptible to some sort of something that was serving them at the expense of others unwittingly or knowingly, you know, and that you dehumanize your own story when you don't take responsibility for something that you weren't a perfect human being. So, and a lot of people think they're immune to these things and it's a human story. So if you're taking
which
it on the
are.
Chin, which, you know,
that's why you're on our podcast. Are,
no, but that's the story, right? And unfortunately, we don't have a culture where people are incentivized to go do that. That's why you don't see a politician get up there and go, you know what? I fucked up. When I did this, it hurt a lot of bunch of people and I made a mistake because the other side's going, see, he fucked up. He's a bad person. And so that's why you have these polarizations. But the real stories, the ones that people walk away from and go, I can relate, are the ones where you go, good for that person. They made a mistake and they're turning a negative thing into a positive. So you're going to get that if they're still loyal to a company and they're complicit with the abuse.
It's just incredible to me. Like, it's incredible when faced with factual evidence, receipts, screenshots, testimony, it's still not enough.
Well, they got to save face. And it's hard to admit you're wrong.
It is hard to admit that you're wrong.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to admit you're wrong. You got to be embarrassed. You got to be humiliated. The only thing you do by not admitting it is you kick the can down the road because you're going to have to do it at some point.
I mean, there are definitely people out there that are spilling and saying, yes, this is true. Yes. And, you know, they're reaching out to me and saying, I want to spill on the podcast. I said, let's go. You know, like, let's tell the true stories. This documentary.
You're the trailblazer.
Yeah. This documentary was meant for everybody else that's not involved in LuLaRoe. I've had a lot of people go, they left so much out. And I said, yeah, I know, but we've been investigating LuLaRoe for 4 years. We know all of this stuff. I'm sorry, but you know, like, this is for normal people that don't know anything about this. And now they can dig deeper and find all of the deep seated truth and all the really weird stuff that wasn't in the documentary.
I want to know how the filmmakers got Mark and Deanne to agree to be in it. Were they there to speak their truth and like set the record straight, or what were they doing?
So Jenner and Julia, they reached out to Mark and Deanne and they said, hey, we're making a film about LuLaRoe. So you can either be a part of it and tell your story in your own words, or we'll just tell your story for you. And they're narcissists. So they were like, we will definitely be there.
Amazing. And they didn't have any stipulation about reviewing the final cut or anything like that.
I don't think so.
That's great. Good. I'm glad they did that.
They are spinning it now, though. I remember when the documentary trailer came out, they spun it, you know, and it never came from Deanne. It always came from the top leaders. It came from Kim Roylance, who was the one that told everybody to sell their breast milk. I got screenshots that, you know, this is a terrible portrayal, that Mark and Deanne did this in good faith and they were duped. They thought they were going to be sharing the true story of LuLaRoe.
Mm-hmm. Wait, they were duped? I thought there were no victims.
Convenient. And I thought that they participated on their own without a problem, but apparently they were duped. That this was all made to slander LuLaRoe and to disparage them. Deanne went live the other day and saying, LuLaRich, you know what? We're LuLaRich in. We're LuLaRich in love and we're LuLaRich in. And she's just saying all this like ridiculous stuff. And then she says to the effect of, you know, don't listen to the 4 retailers in the film that had a bad experience. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, just the 4 of us. They made an entire movie about 4 people.
Mm-hmm. Trust me, I know.
A $1 billion lawsuit over 4 people. A pyramid scheme lawsuit in the state of Washington over 4 people.
Yeah.
And then I tweeted out, I had 4 different podcast episodes from former LuLaRoe victims. I had 4 different ones. So I tweeted all the links out and I said, oh, only 4, Deanne? Well, here's 4 more. So I know there's at least 8 of us at this point.
Good for you. Trust me, no one knows how you feel more than we do.
You should onboard a few more.
I know. And I think if everybody just takes this film and they just refer like 3 people and just tell them to refer 3 people to watch it, after 14 levels, we will have reached everyone on Earth and everyone will have seen this film.
Brilliant.
You should offer them to be on your podcast and make them wait 6 weeks.
We'd love to have on. I'm sorry. Sure. There's so many people that want to be our guests. You're going to have to wait 6 weeks.
But in the meantime, you can talk to these 8 people.
Yeah. In the meantime, I've created a waiting room group that you guys can discuss things in.
But before we get there, and we diverted massively, we never... I'm sorry. No, it's fine. It was my fault. I'm nippy nose. That's why we circle back a lot on this podcast. We're circling back to things were good. Then you went on the sketchy cruise. But I still don't know. Did you have a 1 aha, or did you have a series of things and then a final tipping of the scale?
Okay. So there was a series of things. There was like an aha and then a cruise and then an aha and then something else and then an aha and then something else. I remember, that's what it was. The cruise was a bauble that got dangled after I had questions. And then I remember I had questions about something else. And then I got invited to go to the Disneyland when we launched our Disney stuff. They had a big party at California Adventure. There was like a LuLaRoe World of Color display. It was ridiculous. And so I went to that. So that was another trinket. I got invited to another leadership thing that I hadn't been invited to because of separate but equal bullshit within LuLaRoe and them compartmentalizing us and dangling carrots and then taking it away to just prove that they can. Just bullshit like that happened a lot. So I got invited to one of those again that I had been uninvited to, but then reinvited to. And it was always these like a realization and then a present and then a realization and a present. And it was just this up and down and up and down. And I think it got to the point where I was like, I can't do this up and down anymore. And then we went to convention and it was a total shit show. There was like this beach party, literally fire festival in a one day beach party. There were the ADA accommodations were non-existent. The travel was horrendous. There was no food. They ran out of food. There was, I don't know how many people, thousands and thousands, probably 25,000 people minimum on this beach in Huntington Beach, you know, the big, wide, expansive beaches right there. They've got like Ziggy Marley playing. They've got there's no food. There's nothing. People are like, how can we go get food? Well, no, we bust you in. So you can't even leave. And there's nothing around because it's just beach and bluff for as far as you can see. There's nowhere to go. So these people are like, what do we eat?
Who screwed that up?
LuLaRoe.
So this is another thing that I thought was a similarity with all the things we've seen. There's anything that's positive is hashtag because of the group, like hashtag because of LuLaRoe.
Yeah.
Anything that's negative, any mistake is not their fault.
No.
Never their fault. It was, and if you bring it up, what would happen if you were to complain?
Well, it depends on how I complained. If I complained in a public forum, like if I left a comment that I'm complaining, the comment would be immediately deleted. And then I would most likely get an instant message telling me I deleted your comment and this is why. And we don't do that. And this is why. And here's how to correct yourself. Have a blessed day. You know, like that sort of thing where you're like, I just said I was hungry. And they're like, that's negative. I'm like, oh, okay.
So you can't be negative. There's no place to express any concern. Yeah.
And the toxic positivity is so unbelievably rampant in multi-level marketing.
Positivity.
Yeah. That's well, because so you have to always show everything's good. Yeah. And
everything.
It's also,
no matter what.
Also really hard. And I would totally relate to this because so many of the people in my team and in my, what they call our organization, were my close friends. But because I was a higher rank, I could never tell them that what I was struggling with. Like most people didn't know all the inner conflicts I was having until they read my book. And they're like, wow, I didn't know, you had no idea you were going through all that. I'm like, well, I couldn't tell you because I was a higher rank. And that would have been,
right,
you know, bad morale to express what I would wanted to complain about. And I had lots of complaints.
Yeah.
Didn't know where to put them.
I remember one time my sister commented, because my sister did it with me. She joined, I don't know, a couple months after I did. And there were some issues with shipping and the shipping times were long. I mean, we're waiting weeks and weeks and your money's invested. You can't get your money back until you sell what's in that box. And that box hasn't come for 2 weeks. So what am I supposed to do? I'm not going to order more stuff. I don't want more money getting stuck in boxes that aren't coming. So my sister just casually made a comment. Hey, has anybody, you know, any tracking information? It's been taking a little longer than expected. I just want to know basically what to expect and when to expect it. Has anybody having similar situations, right? It was immediately deleted. And my upline reached out to me and said that I needed to control my sister because she was being very negative and that we had people in that group that had not yet onboarded and she didn't want them to see that negativity and maybe decide not to join LuLaRoe.
Yeah, nothing like that's sustainable.
I was like, I'm sorry. She asked about shipping times. That was one of the things where I was like, how is shipping times negative? Like you could have just been like, UPS is really slow and blamed it on UPS. They blamed everything on UPS.
Like the soggy, stinky leggings.
The soggy, stinking leggings were UPS's fault.
Was that your final wake up?
That was not my final wake up.
Oh,
but
no.
They owed like UPS like $2 million or more in like unpaid shipping fees. They had to switch to FedEx because UPS would not work with them anymore because they're like, you owe us $2 million.
Why have they paid UPS?
I don't know. They probably have by this point. I don't know. But that was something that was happening when they weren't paying my Dyer and the loss. They weren't paying anybody.
Okay. I want to know, we have questions about the current state of LuLaRoe and lawsuits. Before we get there, circling back.
Okay.
So what was your final, that you said in the doc, oh my God, I'm in a cult. That's when you, like, what was that?
Okay. So the, oh my God, I was in a cult realization. Yeah. Was me sitting down and like already feeling this way and sitting down because Leah's show had come back on. And I was like, fuck yes, Aftermath's on. I'm taking a break. I'm watching it. And I burst into tears because it was like a Survivor episode. And she had a ton of people that had gotten out and they were sitting on the couches and they were telling their stories and they were telling the things that had happened to them. And I am sitting there and I'm getting emotional right now thinking about it. I burst into tears because every single person like said something, and I had an example, a similar example to what had happened to me in LuLaRoe. Every single person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I'm in a fucking cult. I'm in a cult. And then I saw it, and I still was in LuLaRoe when that was happening. And that's when I decided, I think maybe what the people that have been this negativity that's happening might not actually be negativity. It might actually be the truth. And so that's when I joined the defective group. And my friend Heather was in there. She says, boop, you're booted. You're blocked immediately. I was like, what? What did I do? I've never even been in the group. How did I get blocked? She's like, it says you work for LuLaRoe in your profile. We're not letting you in here. And I said, I do, but I'm leaving. And I have all the tea, and I'm willing to spill, and I'm willing to corroborate, but I need to make sure that everything, I need to see the truth. And she said, okay. And she let me in. And I've been in that group since. And I want to say the first week I was in there was just tears. I seriously read every post and every comment, liking, responding. Yep, that happened to me too. Yep, I was there. I can corroborate that. That happened to me. I cried. It was the first breaking point where I was like, holy shit. I've been gaslit and lied to for the past 20 months. Everything is a lie. Everything is a cover up. These people are crooks. There was stuff about their past that was in there that I saw that I was like, how did none of this come out before any of us joined this? How did they hide this so well for so long?
They painted some good stories. I heard the stories when they were talking, when Mark and Deanne were telling their stories and the way that they spoke, and it made me a little bit nauseous.
Cringeworthy.
Super cringeworthy, because it's the same. Keith and Nancy had the same stories. Like, well, this is how we met. And no. And the way they talk about it in this sort of like faux humble way.
It's so scripted.
It's super scripted. It's super inauthentic. I can spot it a mile away now. But one of the things I notice about for you and the other people who woke up is that you all shared that you started to talk and you started to share. And I think that's what's so important. And another process I really want to highlight, that these groups, MLM cult, whatever you want to call it, they keep people isolated, and you're not allowed to share negative things because our group, you're labeled being suppressive, you're being negative, same thing. And then you can't express what's going on, and then nobody has the full picture. If people are allowed to express and communicate openly and transparently, I mean, the company never would have grown because these things would have been exposed sooner. But because everyone was siloed in these little sections of toxic positivity, you don't have the full picture. So I think that's super important. And I want people listening to catch on to that. If you're in anything, organization, government, relationship, where you're being told not to express something that you see as problematic, that is a number one red flag right there.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important. And that's actually when Mark Vicente and I finally had an open, honest conversation, what was going on. And I told him about the branding, and he told me about women being
starved,
but also that he heard about women getting the assignment to go seduce Keith. And I was like, what the fuck, sex is involved? And then I saw the full picture, you know?
Wow.
And we pretty much had the full picture of what DOS really was, what it was meant to do, the sex trafficking and everything. I mean, there's way more that came out in the trial that we didn't know about, but we really, because of that one conversation where we were able to speak openly and honestly and with transparency, we saw what was going on and the veil was lifted.
I have a question for you. The product itself, could there have been a successful business created around this product without all this shit show and MLM and all that stuff? Do you think there was enough there for it to stand on its own and have a honest business?
Not to hit $1 billion in 2 years,
right.
No.
Right.
No. But I mean, if they just really wanted to focus on this LDS, modesty, Mormon housewife subset, which is fine. If that's what they want to focus on, you know, all of their clothes were long enough to cover LDS garments, if that's what you choose to wear. That's why the sleeves were long and everything was like below the knee. So yeah, like that's fine. If that's what you want to do, I'm sure it would have sold if they sold it on the website, if they could have just sold it or had even affiliate programs where people could just be an affiliate rep and share their link and get 20% commission or whatever, you know, like it probably could have been a sustainable business, but how fast they grew was because they wanted that money and they couldn't sustain it at a quality level. They had to cut corners. They cut a lot of corners.
Yeah.
They grew way too fast. They're still an MLM. So I'm not going to give them any sort of pass on that, but you know, had they done it legitimate and not grown so fast, maybe they could have done it. Maybe they could have just had LuLaRoe selling skirts on Instagram and they could have made a couple million. They don't need a jet and two fancy $1 million sports cars and a ranch in Wyoming and all of these things. You don't need all of that. Mm-hmm. You could have just had a successful little leggings and skirt business, whatever, and not roped in, you know, 90,000 women or something.
People's lives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you think there is a bait and switch there? We're going to get these people in here and then we're going to enforce or, you know, force our dogma onto them. You think that was something that came later?
I mean, I don't know if it was. Here's the thing. It's hard for me because I like want to believe in the good in people, but like I've seen it. So it's like they've betrayed me so many times. Like it's really hard for me to think that they were ever honest at any point, especially like knowing their background and what they did before LuLaRoe and the shady things that they did. They've been shady. Their whole family is shady. Yeah. Their whole family's been shady for years and years. The family tree is rotten at the roots. So
the deposition sequence to me was like, okay.
And how do they get those deposition tapes? Those were amazing to be able to cut back and forth between them saying, oh, I don't know. I don't remember that. I didn't do that. And then the video of them doing it.
Yeah. They called the attorney general and they were like, hey.
Brilliant.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. I think that when you have that kind of, in Axiom, they used to call it class one data. Like you can't deny that. It's like right there. It's, it's the person saying it themselves. In contrast with the opposite and the lie, although in Nexium, there's another fail-safe protection around that, which Keith created, which was basically the ethical lie, where in certain situations, it's okay to lie because you're upholding a certain ethic. In this case, and she probably thinks that Deanne thinks she's doing that. She's lying to protect the company, which is the right thing to do. Because the company is ultimately good and it's her job to protect it.
Yeah. I firmly believe it was always a scam. The more I learn, the more that I see, the harder it is for me to think that there's any shred of innocence and to assume any innocence at all, because they're a family of grifters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, another similarity. And ironically, Keith taught us about grifters. And we didn't realize till we were out that he was the number one grifter.
Right.
Latching on from one woman to another and draining her funds and never working and being a lazy fuck and just pretending to be this other person.
It's incredible to me that both Keith and Mark and Deanne all have Amway ties.
That's on my list. They both did Amway. Oh, and by the way, when people said, is this an MLM? We were trying to say no, because MLMs are inherently unethical. And this is an ethical business structure. Therefore, it is not an MLM.
Oh,
another thought stopping cliche. You can't question that. Well, okay. All right, fine. So it's not an MLM because it's ethical.
My favorite one is it can't be a pyramid scheme because pyramid schemes are legal and I would never do anything illegal.
Okay. So yeah, Amanda Montel talked about that in the book. That is a thought-stopping cliche. That doesn't even make sense. It makes zero sense. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, murder's illegal too, but people still do it. Like,
I mean, so Mark was at one point preaching from the Book of Mormon at a conference and that came out of nowhere because not everyone was Mormon and that turned a lot of people off.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I'm not raised in the church. So like hearing that kind of stuff when I'm sitting there trying to like learn business acumen, I have like this notebook and I'm like ready to like, I'm raring to go, right? I'm like, let's figure out the best way to do this. And he's like, if I could just pause for a second and speak about my favorite verse from the Book of Mormon. And I know we're not all Mormon, but I just think that, you know, and I'm just like sitting there and I'm like, what?
Barf, barf, barfarama.
I'm like, okay, well, I'll just put my pin down because like this is not anything I signed up for at all. Like, what is happening?
If any LuLaRoe reps are listening to this and they are still indoctrinated and want to stay true, I hope they listen to our Mormon episode, which is coming up later in the season.
Ooh.
Researching that right now. And that's
shocking
to me. Shocking. Somebody wanted to know, what is the difference? If you can, maybe you can explain this. I have my own understanding as well. What's the difference between an MLM and a pyramid scheme?
Short answer, The government protects MLMs.
Correct. Ding, ding, ding. That's the
only answer I can give you.
Yeah, they protect them through a loophole, which basically says if you can prove that you're selling more product than you are in the emphasis on recruiting people, then it's an MLM and that's not illegal. But really, it's the same thing.
Yeah, you look at the numbers and it's very easy to prove that that's not actually happening either.
Douglas Brooks blows that up.
Yeah.
And the guy from Lula Rich.
Robert Fitzpatrick.
Robert Fitzpatrick
and Doug Brooks are fantastic, amazing. The late Dr. John Taylor, fantastic, amazing, wonderful, like pioneers in the anti-MLM movement. People want to know more, like look at these men and their research. They are fantastic pioneers.
And you talk a lot about that in your podcast, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll have a link to that in our show notes. Then we could talk for hours, obviously, but let's, I'm attempting to wrap up a couple loose ends for me, circling back. Can you tell our audience what the current status is of the lawsuits and LuLaRoe's?
The current status of the lawsuits, there are several pending lawsuits. I know that there's like a big class action that they're trying to get through. There's the My Dyer lawsuit. LuLaRoe has a really ridiculous arbitration clause that was in their contract that literally nobody read. And so it's really, really, really hard to get any movement. And LuLaRoe's legal team loves to pussyfoot around and stretch things out and basically just drain the other person's bank account and mm-hmm. get nowhere. So most people end up just ending because they can't afford to be drained by LuLaRoe. But, you know, the My Dyer lawsuit is a huge one that's going on right now. It's with their distributor that they weren't paying. And they're saying, well, we're not going to pay you because you were making bad products. It's ridiculous. Becca is the one that knows everything about those lawsuits. She's been posting a lot of stuff on Twitter. And she shares a lot of that information, a lot of the tea that we've been sharing on Twitter so that people have a little bit more context and backstory to LuLaRich.
Wait, hold on. Tea is the metaphor for the
gossip.
The inside scoop. Okay.
Yeah, the inside scoop. Spill the tea.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah. We like hashtag MLMT and all that kind of stuff. It's very fun.
Love it.
It's just, there's been literally dozens and dozens and dozens of lawsuits. There was at one point where we were finding lawsuits almost every single day. Oh, there's another one. And we had a graphic in Defective that was like 0 days since our last lawsuit that we would post every time a new lawsuit had been posted.
It was just ridiculous.
I was not part of any of them as like a person involved in the lawsuit, but I did help with three different ones with evidence. And I helped mostly with the Washington Attorney General's lawsuit, helped them with their three-year investigation, helped them find other people to testify and other people to corroborate, other people to give evidence. I testified against them. I was very excited. I took my deposition and I was very excited to take the stand. And then 2 weeks before they settled. And so I didn't get to take the stand, but I did have a deposition. I was almost worried it was going to be in LuLaRich because I was like, oh no, I looked a hot mess that day. like was not prepared, but it was really good. I was very spicy in the deposition. I remember their lawyer asked me something about how many retailers are there in LuLaRoe currently? Like, I know that. And I was like, why would I know that, Bill? Deanne doesn't even know that. So it was like that sort of attitude when they would ask me questions like that, because I'm like, what are we doing? Why are you wasting my time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good, like, don't we have families to get back to? Really?
Yeah. You showed them.
Yeah, it just was ridiculous. Some of the questions that I was asked, I was like, are we for real right now? Yeah. I mean, there's so many lawsuits. There's so many ongoing lawsuits and they're up and down all the time. So
more importantly, and well, that's also very important, but I want to know how you are doing now and where you're at in your healing process. And obviously you're in the activism stage, which I think is very important. And not everybody does that. Not everybody wants to do it. So I commend you.
It's tough. It's tough. Yeah, it's a very tough path to take. I get a lot of hate. That hate fuels me. You know, a lot of people would burn in that fire, but that fire, I'm a phoenix and I just keep being reborn. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I did this with the Vice documentary when it came out 2 or 3 years ago. The vitriol was still there. I still get it. I get it when I post about Amway. I get it when I post about Isagenics. I get it when I post about Mary Kay. It doesn't matter what I post about. It doesn't matter what I expose. I get the hate all the time. Right now, it's just the Lula hate. You know, they're taking me down on TikTok. They're leaving 1-star reviews trying to get the documentary. Like, they're like, if we just review it with 1-star, nobody will want to watch it because it won't have any ratings. And I was like, Streisand effect, you guys. I'm like, I can't even keep up with the interview requests of people wanting to talk to me about these things that are happening. I'm like, you guys are trying to suppress this information and you're just making it even more intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, wait, why are they doing this? I gotta watch it now.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, like, the activism is wonderful. It's great. It's super fun. I love I guess they're my fans. It's just such a weird thing to say, but I love them. My followers, they are wonderful. We learn so much every day about multi-level marketing. They ask incredible questions. We're on TikTok. I got banned the day the movie came out. Odd coincidence. I think not, for a week. And in the time, for bullying on a video I had posted a month and a half earlier.
Mm.
Yeah.
You seem like a bit of a bully.
I'm such a bully. And so they took me down. I was a little angry, but I went to my backup and now my backup's banned too. But in the time that I was banned, I got, I think, 30,000 new followers on my TikTok in like the 4 days that I've been banned. So wow. I'm telling them, it doesn't matter. Take me down. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I needed the break. I have a lot of podcast episodes to update. So I'm not wasting my time on TikTok now. Thank you. I needed a little break. I appreciate that.
All right. Detox.
Hashtag because of LuLaRoe.
Hashtag because of LuLaRoe. And what I'm doing now, like, I want this to be something, you know. I would love to be an advocate of the likes of Doug and Robert. It's fantastic to me. I think we need more women voices. We have Hannah Martin from Talented Ladies Club. That's a wonderful woman voice that's speaking out against MLMs too. But I want more women speaking out about this. Like 76, I want to say it's like 74-ish percent, 75, 76, something like that. Victims of multi-level marketing companies are women. And it's an industry where we say that it's women empowerment, and yet 3/4 of the victims are women. What? This doesn't make any sense. 99.7% of people lose money in MLMs. How is that profitable? How is that the wave of the future? How is that the best industry to join?
Do you know about the Chats My Ass? Are you familiar with this?
Okay, no, I don't know.
Okay, so in season one, with every episode, with every survivor, we ask them for something their ass about their group. And I mean, I'm just going to have mine be that about yours and with mine. So it's an overall chaps your my ass about how women's empowerment is the loaded language and the hook that brings people in. And it is the complete fucking opposite. Complete opposite. So that chaps my ass in my group and your group, Nexium and LuLaRoe. That's the correlation. What's the thing? And I want this to ideally be something you didn't talk about in the doc, but it could be something trivial, something that chaps your ass. It could be about the leaders or something that happened on the cruise or whatever. Just like something that just like really chaps your ass. Not stinky leggings. We know about that already. Put you on the spot.
I'm trying to think.
Like, did you have to send all those leggings to people yourself? Like, go to the post office? Is that something that happened? Because that would chap my ass. That seems like really laborious. I didn't mean to give you a chap my ass.
You know what? Yeah. Okay. So the thing that I think probably chapped my ass about being in LuLaRoe was there was so much stuff that we had to do that was really never explained, right? Of course, yeah, you're running a business. You're going to have to be taking photos and going to the post office and doing these things. But there was so much. It was so much. And I'm sorry, but working 10 hours a day is not part-time. Like, mm-hmm. getting these boxes, unpacking the boxes, going live, showing the things, taking the pictures, doing the having the sale, doing the inventory and the invoices and the shipping and there was just so much. And I know that that's what's involved in running a business, but like people usually have helpers and it was just me. And it was so much.
Like even with a $10 to $25 legging markup, if you're making $15 and you still have to go to the post office and send it, that doesn't seem like a good use of your, that doesn't seem like a good use of your time. If you want to,
it's true, right? So what happens is like, there's so many costs. Like when I talk about the 99.7% of loss, there's so many costs that people don't assume. They're like, there's no way I'm losing 99.7%. I'm making money. Like you're not even talking about your expenses. But also there's other things. There's the sunk costs that you're not thinking of. The things you're never going to recoup any money on. Hangers, racks, time, business cards, propaganda, like whatever. You're not going to get your time back. You're not going to get your money back. You're not going to get that. And you're not getting paid for it either. And then there's the opportunity costs that nobody thinks of, right? So while I'm at home slaving for 50 cents an hour, I could have had a job at McDonald's making $15 an hour. So I'm losing $14.50 an hour by choosing something that is not actually bringing me anything that's viable.
Right.
And people don't understand that either. And I say, hey, 99.7, maybe this is what chaps my ass. 99.7% of people lose money in multi-level marketing. It has been studied. You can look at you show me any income disclosure, I can show you it's going to be very close between 95 and 99% loss. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to see. Anybody that has a calculator can figure it out. But for some reason, it's touted as the American dream, the wave of the future. This is network marketing is the future. everybody's in network marketing. This is the best thing. And I was just like, but statistically, nothing you're saying is true. The lies, the deception, that's what makes it a cult. Robert mm-hmm. Fitzpatrick says MLM's core competency is deception. Mm-hmm. And without it, it will not work. It just won't.
That's the same thing with the cult. That's why in our MLM episode in season one, we were like, oh my God, it's the same. It's the same deception. It's the same bait and switch.
And the abuse of power.
Exactly the same.
What chaps my ass is seeing the cognitive dissonance. When you're showing people like facts and they're just like, well, not for me.
Well, that like, hasn't been my experience. So
yeah, it doesn't matter if it's not your experience. That's the one that really just kind of chaps my ass.
Yeah.
As a collective right now, collectively, universally, just people just, there's intel and people just go, oh, that's been debunked or it's not my experience.
Yeah. Or there wasn't due process.
Well, now it's your experience. Why aren't you?
I've been calling it fair gaming and I'm calling it out. And a lot of people have been like, yes, Scientology reference. And I said, that's what it is. That's what it is. This fair gaming, this taking me down, these one-star reviews, these fake reviews. To make people think the lies spread about me, people getting on troll accounts, on new accounts and saying, this girl's lying. Her timeline is sus. I'm like, who is this person? Like,
yeah, we've had a couple of those, but
yeah,
it's the weirdest thing. And I'm the one that needs a hobby, right? I'm the one that needs a hobby, not the person making fake accounts to spread lies about me.
Yeah.
I'm proud of what you're doing. And I'm going to tell Leah that her episode helped wake you up.
Oh my
her
God.
Show helped wake you up. And did yes. you check out our interview with her from season one? That's one of
oh,
our favorites.
I seriously, I love Leah. She's awesome. I mean, if she wants to talk to me, like I'm done with these companies hurting people.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm down. Like these are cults. These are commercial cults. It is the same shit. And here's my Scientology fun fact. You guys want to know something fun?
Yeah.
I am friends with Jenna Miskovich and Dallas Hill, who is Jenna Miskovich is the niece of the big baddie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Jenna Hill, she wrote a book, she left, and she's been my sort of inspiration for going forward too.
Good.
You know, and yeah. you as well. These beautiful, awesome. Strong, wonderful women that came before me. I'm like, I'm falling in line. Let's start a parade. Who wants to get yes. behind me? Let's go.
Yes. I said the same thing to Leah when we had her on our show. I said, that's
toot, toot.
You did it first and I'm going to follow. And thanks for being my inspiration. And, you know, like I said, that's using the skills and the best parts of who you are for good. And that's the best thing you can do. I think, you know, what is the sweetest irony for me, Roberta? And I feel like we're similar in this way is that you were able to use the skills that many of which you had before you got involved, some of them that you learned along the way, which you probably did. And you use all of those things to shine light on the abuses that you saw and take these motherfuckers down. And that just makes me so pumped because it's so ironic and it's so beautifully poetic because now you're using your values and these principles that we talked about earlier for good,
right? Thank you.
For real good. You know,
you
thought it was good before, you realized it was bad, and now you're using all that skill set to do real good.
Yeah.
And it's just so important. And it shows also that it's not from them. It's not hashtag because of LuLaRoe. It's because hashtag because of Roberta.
Yeah.
And that's fucking powerful. And that makes
Thank
me really
you.
Excited.
I like that hashtag. Maybe we should trend that.
Yes. Hashtag because of Roberta. I love it. Don't you think?
You know, this whole movement is so amazing. It's so wonderful to see so many of my friends' faces on the screen and all of the people that helped us in this documentary and all of the people behind the scenes that helped that aren't even featured. We have a Facebook group, a huge group of us. And this is what we do. And we share this information and we dig and we find things. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I know that this is not the last thing that we'll hear about from LuLaRoe. And I'm excited to see the other stories that come out of it.
So I commend you for that. And where can our listeners find more about you and your podcast and the things that you're doing?
Well, I just started my own website, which is very bare bones right now. So it's just a place that I needed a landing when I'm getting taken down by all of these people. So robertablevins.com, it's going to have all the information. But you can find me on TikTok as Berta Like Whoa or Berta Like Whoa 2.0. I'm on Instagram as The Real Roberta Blevins. And I think I'm on Twitter as Berta Like Whoa too. But again, you go to my website, you're going to be able to find all of those links. My podcast is Life After MLM, and it's just me. It's not nearly as beautifully produced as some of these other podcasts, but we talk to survivors. We try to keep it light and fun. We try to have a good time. Catharsis and comedy while healing seems to work really well in this industry. And so, you know, we talk about it, we make jokes, and we sort of poke fun at the stereotypes. And I think a lot of people, I get a lot of messages from people saying, your podcast is my therapy. Thank you so much. So,
oh, good.
I hope that we can continue to spill the tea and to share the truth and to help people heal and realize. And my tagline is ending the stigma of failure in an industry that's systemically designed for you to fail.
Oh,
so that's literally my job. Like, that's what I'm doing, right? You're not a failure. 99.7% of people failed. If you failed, girl, you succeeded.
Hashtag boss babe.
Hashtag like boss babe.
What do you think, Sarah?
I mean, we stopped recording to say goodbye. And then, of course, we talked for another 20 minutes. And Roberta said something that I thought was really interesting, which is that she appreciated, you know, different tangents because she's got ADHD, but she prefers the term neural divergent. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's what I am. I'm neural divergent.
I see you're loading language now.
Well, we always have to circle back. And that makes me feel, I like that better than ADHD. And she also said that people who are good at MLMs, like myself and her, embarrassingly, but it's true, because you get the dopamine hit of the success and of the sale. And that's also partly what people who are neurodivergent have. And also why explains why you were less good at MLMs, because you were not divergent, because you're not ADHD like I am.
So
you're,
it's loading language and cognitive dissonance now. I see how the outros work here. We'd like to thank our listeners for tuning in.
Thank you.
I'm staying on task.
What do you think?
Look, it's all the same shit, right? It's the same shit, different system, different content, same abuses of power. And her story is akin to ours, just different content. It's leggings and not branding.
Lula Rich on Amazon Prime. A must see.
Check it out. Check it out. Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks everyone for listening.
All right. Bye-bye. Sinking down to the depths. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. Takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.